Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years. And number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
You know, doing well. We're about, it's going to be 100 degrees here in California.
Oh, no. What's the humidity?
So summer is here. Summer has arrived all
good.
Of a sudden. Yeah. Well, we've got the pool all in shape, so we're ready to go kind of float around on the pool. And so all the work you
That's
do.
That's wonderful. That's awesome. And you get do laps in the pool.
Yeah, 7 or 8 months a year, you keep the pool up and work on it so that for 3 or 4 months you can actually use it. But I'm okay with that. You know? I'm okay, especially when it's 100, 105 degrees here.
So you get it from like May, June till maybe September at the most, huh?
Yeah.
August, September. Yeah, it's awesome. It keeps you busy, though. But
not
your humidity, is the humidity high or is it pretty comfortable?
It's usually, the good news is it's kind of a dry heat here. So that's the good news. It's not so humid like in the south or, other places. So, what's going on in your world? We always catch up here right at the beginning of the show.
Everything's good. Just trying to get things going So our show today is actually going to be about the first half, although we do real estate always, is tap into your spirit and soul before making a decision. So you and I probably have a lot to talk to about that because we're so good at trying to do that and listening to our spirit and soul. And then the second half, Randy, you have...
Dr. Glenn Villanueva, who is a medical doctor, he's a physician, but he's co-written a book called The Me Addiction, Having It My Way Isn't So Great After All. And the whole point of it is, that we human beings, regardless of how spiritual we want to be, are inherently selfish, which, you know, we talk about that all the time. That's the challenge that I think we all human beings face. And so the me addiction is a fascinating conversation. We'll see what happens. He's a great guy, very articulate. I actually, full disclosure, while we were at KAMB Radio in Central California, for about 3 years, I produced a little kind of a 60-second me addiction minute with him, and so got to kind of know him over those 3 years, and quality dude, and he's right on our wavelength. I mean, he's all about, tapping into the spirit and the soul and everything you do. He's a physician. In fact, he coaches, teaches, trains physicians, so he's kind of a overseas physicians at a hospital. So a lot of responsibility, but a whole lot of everything he does is about spirit, because his concept, without getting too deep into it, and I just want to share why it ties into the first half, is, his whole thing is most people, our knee-jerk reaction to anything anybody presents to us is, what's in it for me? You know, what's in it
That's
for me?
That's a good
That's
point,
kind of,
yeah.
You know, we always, well, what's in it for me? And his whole contention is, what's in it for God? How can we turn that around and look at a situation or opportunity and advance God's agenda rather than our agenda? And so that really does kind of smack you in the face, and we'll spend the second half kind of breaking that out.
You know,
it does
interesting.
Tie in.
Yeah, because everything is, it's a life journey, right? And it's all about the journey, and it's interesting how it ties in, and when people finally start listening to their spirit and soul, it makes life a lot easier, doesn't it? And you can't have the knee-jerk reaction to everything, you know, either. It's wild.
It all ties in. Right? It all ties in. You're right. The whole life is not, and I think men, you know, we are known for compartmentalizing, right? We have boxes in our lives, and we kind of move from box to box. We focus on one box. But the idea of really, and that's where that dangerous mentality comes of, well, yeah, you know, I go to church on Sunday, but the rest of the week, you know, that's, God's not with me there. And the whole point is, yes, he is. And how you really operate and, you know, conduct yourself apart from your quote-unquote church thing on Sunday.
You know, I find it interesting because it ties in with what we're talking about, spirit and soul, even on the first half with real estate and how making decisions, is that, you know, so many of the answers are within, and I really believe it's the way we were programmed. You know, God and the way we were created to be able to heal, and the lessons and the intuition and all that stuff that's kind of inherently put into us, right? And so many people are always searching for something out there, searching for this. And you know, that's where a lot of faith comes in with God. And I've had a couple situations where I've been getting approached by these other groups that I'm not going to say names, you know, that are like, we have the answer. We're doing soul work. We're doing this. And it's like, wow, that's really interesting. And I'm always interested in learning and finding out about other groups and situations. No, I really am. I've always been that way.
Yeah.
I've always been a readaholic and learning because I want to see all the different perspectives and why people think this way or that way, and I find it interesting. And you know, I've been approached by other groups in the past, and then even lately there was two different groups that were brought up that I checked out one, and immediately after, you know, a few classes, going to the class and going to a semi-retreat, I said, now this isn't for me. But what's interesting is for me, and then as we get older, isn't it interesting, Randy, like you get older and you go, I felt that when I was younger. I felt this when I was, you know, just an adult. And we always used to second guess ourselves. As you get older and the miracles happen more and more and more, and the subtle, you know, the intuition that you're strong with, and the no contradictions, like I love the Bible, and I didn't understand the Bible like I do today because I used to just get mixed up with the parables and whatever. Not mixed up, but it was just like, man, this is a hard read. But once the veil comes off and you really get the scriptures and you feel that love with God, it's not about religion. It's more reality. But the older we get, the more we feel very comfortable and feel very sure of that. But what I've noticed is, like, you know, Jesus's teachings are very loving. Jesus wasn't forcing anybody to do anything. As a matter of fact, you know, he'd mention, you know, if they don't want to listen, they don't want to go, and then just dust off your shoes and move on, right, or off your feet and move on. He couldn't perform miracles in his own hometown because, you know, we've always got, you know, familiarity always breeds contempt. But one common denominator that I've noticed, if with a lot of these other groups that say we are the only way or the one, and become one of us, and we're preaching or meditating. This one group, they actually do a lot of chanting to these masters, and I'm just like, this isn't for me. And they're saying that gives you the power to get up there and have these things done. And I noticed a lot of the things that they were trying to teach people as new to them wasn't new at all. It was stuff that's in the Bible. It was generational things and curses and blessings and things that are not new. It's almost like people are taking these things and rewriting them, trying to say they came up with it. But the one common denominator that I've noticed over the years, and I guess being in the industry I've been in, I'm very open game, you know. People could say, hey, we're interested in real estate, and you find out there's really other more to it, you know. But it's easy to get, you know, accessible at times. But the one common denominator all these years is some type of controlling issue, almost cultish, you know. And certain things where it's like, no, do the regime like this, like this, like this, like this. Oh, you only be one of us. We're above. We're powerful. We can do this. Even if people are saying we want to save the world, and you go, wow, that's really loving. These people seem really, really caring, really loving, really spiritual, really on it. But when you start to see like controlling and the rules and the regs and stuff, that's one common denominator I've noticed in many of these different types of organizations or things that spring up. That's just what I've noticed. And I've always thought, Jesus doesn't do that. He doesn't tell us you have to. Now, of course, in the Bible it says the only way through to heaven is through me, but I'm not. But that's a different issue. But so, you know, so, and then when people keep saying religion, and I'm like, I agree, it's not, religion should be a reality. It shouldn't be where people just go to church on Sunday and then they're finished, you know, or they're, so not to get into a bunch of that, but it just leads back to when you really do tap into your spirit and soul and trust that inner guidance, you kind of, it's like, you know, when you know the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, you know, when there's like a peace about a decision and it's not, oh, I'm really nervous, I'm not sure. I found when you're really nervous about the situation and you're not sure, I mean, of course, when you're going to start something new, there's going to be a certain amount of fear or trepidation that's going to come out. But, you know, there's going to be a certain amount that you have to go, okay, is this just me being getting the jitters because I've never done this before? But that's different. But there's a certain feeling that comes out when you have a peace. No, this is the right thing to do. There's a right thing and a wrong thing. You know, there's always right and wrong. We have choices all day long, right?
Yep.
And a right choice is going to give you peace. But when you have peace about it and there's no questioning, then that's, you know, something to look at and to see how that goes.
Peace is so important, you know, and it is, as you say, it is often a barometer of, you know, of the right decision. You know, when you have a peace, and that, you know, the Bible talks about the still small voice, which I love. You know, be still and know that I am God. The idea of, you know, being quiet, quieting ourselves so that we do hear it. You know, and people talk about following your own intuition. I really believe again that ideally. Because I have followed my own intuition at times, and it's not been a good thing. When I am connected to my source, however, and I truly am still knowing that He's God, like you say, and there's that peace and assurance in my life that I'm connected with God, then my intuition is really, you know, His intuition, right? And we're connected. And anyway, it's a
wonderful thing you start to learn, because I know, like with me, when I was first moving to Hawaii and ended 99, and everyone said, are you crazy? You've had a successful business, just downsize it, go back and forth. And I'm like, no, I know I'm supposed to do this against all odds, and I've never regretted it. I gave up a lot to do it, but I never regretted it. When I started having problems with my hand, my ulnar nerves, and it's really gotten worse and worse after two surgeries, and now I'm having problems with my right hand, and I'm left-handed, and it's just not been fun. It was almost like God in the universe was saying, slow down, pull back. But I didn't have a choice. You know how sometimes I think we'll get knocked on the head if we don't listen, and then something will happen, you know, and just like too much stress causes diseases and causes illnesses, not proper diet. I mean, we know those things now and we can do something about it, but sometimes it's too late by the time you figure. It's not all genetic. It's proven. It's not all genetic. You know, of course, you're predisposed to that. But it's interesting, though, because I'm older now and you're older now, and I'm not making us old, Randy. We're not old. But you become wiser, and when you've done it over and over and over and over and it's always worked, you go, wow, that's part of that intuition. That's part of that, like, ESP. That's part of that stuff that goes, you know, we all have it, and start listening to it. And and that's, like, I've had times where, you know, I know I'm supposed to go here or there and all against all odds, and then later the reason made itself show, you know. So when it comes into, like, say, buying a home that's your home you're going to live in, investment properties are a little different. People are crunching numbers. They're looking at profit. You know, you still should look at that when you're buying your own home, but it's more emotional when you're buying your home. It's more your haven that you're going to be in. So when you're trying to make the decisions in buying your own home, one common denominator I've noticed, including with myself, in all the years when I was dealing with people buying their home and through that whole process, is they would go back, they'd find themselves going back to that one they liked. You know, maybe they looked at 5 houses, 10 houses, or maybe many, many more. And that one property that just kind of pulled their heart, it tugged at their heart, and they kept going back, 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 back. that's typically the one that they ended up buying because it just felt right. It was, you know, and something made them go back and check it out again and go back again and go back again. And that's a common denominator in that situation. Of course, people have to make decisions based on finances and what they can afford and what they can't. So they may plus and minus and say, okay, we're going to give this up for now because we have this, or we can make this room work this way. But it's really another thing I find that's really worth it is to pray on it and sleep a few nights. Like if you're not sure, if you're going, I'm not really sure something, I don't know, and you can actually do that and pray on it a few nights until that jitteriness or that question mark goes away and you wake up and go, okay, this is what I'm doing right now. It's time to do this, you know? And I just think it's very, very important because these are inherent tools that are in us as human beings. We're Christian, we believe in Jesus, but somebody may not, or may have other religions or have other beliefs. No matter what you believe, these are, our spirit and soul is in all of us. It's there. And it's great to utilize it because the heart center, and it meets with, you know, it just makes it, it really is very, very easy to tap into. And then, so say you're buying a property and it's your, you know, you're buying your own house and you've got the husband, you know, the wife, the kids, you know, you have a whole bunch of people that are in this decision. Of course, you have to make it a family decision and everybody's opinion should matter. I say this, tap into your spirit and soul before making a decision. It's a phenomenal barometer that we don't even have all of the answers on how it works, but it works. It works beautifully. And that's why I wanted to just go over that today a little bit. And I knew you'd have a lot of input in that because you've lived the same, you know, way too, in really trusting your intuition. And then, of course, you know, there's a right and a wrong. I mean, you know, whatever you're getting into has to be ethical, have integrity, you know, legal, et cetera. That's without question. But it can't be like, you know, somebody goes out and has a couple glasses of wine or a couple drinks and then all of a sudden, oh, this is what I want to do. You know, I mean, it really is a good idea. No, it's really a good idea to know that you're making the decisions not based on other extenuating circumstances that are doing that, you know, because there's a peacefulness. That's all I can say. It just goes, you know, this feels good. It feels like I'm moving forward. And so that, like with the houses, you know, you definitely want to have your wish list. And the other thing about that is you still want to think analytically. You still want to crunch numbers. You still want to know you qualify. You want to know that you can cover the payments. You want to see how the investment's going to be. You definitely want to see the comparables in the neighborhood. So you want to do your homework. And we're specifically talking about residential sales here if you're looking for your own property, not so much commercial or investment properties and other things that have other factors. So you want to do your homework. You also want to check out the zoning in that area and find out what could be built around you, especially if there's any open space. You just want to definitely avert any pitfalls. You want to work with a professional. You know, you want to make sure that you're covering everything. So all of that goes into the mix. But when you put all that into the mix and then you pray about it or meditate or just ask and say, I want to know that I'm making the right decision. Does this feel right? You're going to feel a couple things. You're going to feel peace. Your heart might start singing. Ooh, I love this. I can't wait. I can just picture us doing this in here. I can picture cooking. I can picture sleeping. I can picture reading. You know, it's just going to feel really, really good.
Mm-hmm. I love that, what you said just now about the heart singing. Very, very, very true. I mean, you know, and again, my friend and mentor John Maxwell talks about that quite a bit, and the idea of, you know, living somebody else's dream versus your dream. When it's your dream, your heart will sing. You'll be excited. It'll make you come alive. When it's somebody else's dream, you know, it'll be a burden. You'll have to work yourself up and be excited about it. I think in terms of buying a house, it might be, the corollary might be, this has everything we want. And if you find yourself trying to talk yourself into it, you might not be super excited about it, and that might be a yellow flag, right? But if your heart sings, if you're like, wow, I can see, ooh, this space would be good for that, and ooh, and you know, all of a sudden there's just this feeling, and I know feelings at times in terms of negative feelings, and we've had plenty of shows where we've talked about this, you know, those kinds of feelings can be sometimes deceiving, you know, the negative side, and oh well, you know, I feel this way, and you know, and those can kind of weigh us down. And but in terms of positivity and positive feelings, I'm a big believer in that. Our friend who's been on your show with us here, Rhonda, Dr. Rhonda Nelson, who's a nutritionist.
Oh, wonderful!
That's one of her favorite sayings. Is she'll say something and go, "Ooh, that just doesn't feel right."
Mm-hmm.
You know, she says that a lot. Even as I'm talking to her about something, and she'll go, "Wow, that just doesn't feel right," and I'm like, "Wow, you are pretty intuitive," you know, and that's true. I think feelings, you know, are important to be in touch with, but not, you know, ruled by. Maybe that's the way to say it. You know, be in touch with your feelings, good or bad, but don't be ruled or, you know, ruled by.
Yeah, and you know, Randy, I mean, we can get so deep on this show that we never have time to go into all the other stuff, but no, when I mean, truly, I mean, and then you kind of get to know, because you know yourself, whether you're just like somebody's a nervous, not you, but I mean in general, somebody's a nervous Nilly, or they're afraid of this, or any time they have to do a big thing, it has other fears that, you know, you can kind of know this isn't coming, this has nothing to do with this purchase, this has to do with me, you know, with issues I may have. Like you get to know yourself over time, and if you really do go through, it's time to heal, as we discuss, and you go through really learning about yourself and spending as much time on yourself as you do on a golf game or, you know, a hobby or, you know, other things like that over the years, you start to decipher and know the difference. You know, if this is like, oh, I just, you know, I'm just nervous around flying. I love flying, but I mean, you know, everybody has different things. Or if, you know, but you know the difference if like, no, I'm just doing my same old thing that I constantly do constantly over and over and over, and I've got to get through that, versus is this my spirit and soul singing about this right now, you know? And you kind of know that difference. It's not and then if something doesn't feel right, it's true. It's a definite red flag. You know, somebody might tap in. You might be going to buy a property, and there could have been other things that happened over the years, and there's some energy there that you don't know about because no one's told you or hasn't been checked into enough, or maybe they don't know. So it's pretty interesting, I think, when you really tap into your spirit and soul and just start listening and trusting. But there's no contradictions, and it also gives you peace. It's not, it's pretty wise. I think it's much wiser than we as humans and our analytical mind are, to be honest.
That brings up a question, and I know because we're talking about tapping in to your, you know, your soul and your spirit, as it regards and relates to real estate. And you being, again, the intuitive, you know, person that you are, and you're a seasoned real estate broker, I'm just going to ask you this because it's just something that popped in my head, and there's no silly questions, right? So here we go. Can you walk into a house and do you get, and I'm not saying every house, but are there homes that you go in and go, ugh, something's weird here?
No, I don't do the showings any, like years ago I would do, you know, the showings like that.
Yeah.
So kind of I have over the years gotten a feeling. Sometimes feelings, whether it was negative, you could feel a lot of arguing or fighting might have gone on, or feelings like yucky feelings versus good feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I have. Okay. It's interesting. I've had clients over the years. We had clients that actually got feng shui masters to come
right.
in, and they have like a certain science of like placement of objects and if certain, you know, things are faced a certain way. And I've actually seen people feel better. I don't know, you know, if it's where things were done or things could be done to make things flow better. Some people like a mess around, you know, so some people don't. Everybody has different personalities. But no, it's true. I mean, some people, you're more comfortable with certain things. But it doesn't faze them. But, yeah, I have. But I think for me, I was always, those years, focused more on what was good for my client. And so for me, on a personal level, my taste would be different from their taste.
yeah,
or what
yeah.
I would really like may be completely different from what they would like. So I would tune
mm-hmm.
more into what they wanted and then make that work, and then I could visualize and see what was good for them, so then I could make suggestions. What about this and this and this? I can see this, this, this. Make totally, I would take me out of the equation completely.
Yeah,
there was a
yeah.
property in Reisterstown, Maryland. Oh, my gosh, it must be the early 90s, and I believe the woman still owns it because I ran into her a couple years ago. It was like done, it was when we went in, it had all the psychedelic colors and all these different carpetings. Like, really, it was very obvious, and it turned out there was, like, militia people that living in there before doing that, the dark militia, you know, the military exercises, but the private, you know, the private
yeah.
citizens that get into that. And it
yeah,
was
yeah.
really, really uncomfortable. I almost got a headache walking in there. And I remember I couldn't stay in there long. It was very bad. I don't know what all went on in there, but it was bad. And she ended up stripping everything, clearing everything, the walls, of, you know, all that stuff. So to answer your question, yeah, on a personal level, I'll get feelings on certain things, but I kind of have tunnel vision, and I can just focus
yeah.
in on what's good for them and take me out of the equation. I've also was good at trying to get the people to get it into their equation. You know, if it doesn't feel right, don't do it. Go home and sleep on it and
yeah.
see if you still keep, which house you keep coming back to. Which one
yeah.
keeps drawing you back to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And there's a parallel. You mentioned that earlier, the idea of, you know, you show somebody, you know, several homes, and they kind of keep going back to, you know, one as they talk and discuss. And I've seen that to be also a corollary, and this is why it's so beautiful that we get to talk about kind of soul selling, if you will, and incorporating
yeah.
the spiritual dynamic. Because even in life, when people, you know, I love helping people kind of rediscover purpose and reawaken dreams.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really doing more and more of that in my coaching with folks. And people ask, well, I just don't know. I don't know what my purpose is, you know? And I'm like, well, what, first of all, you know, what have you been doing? What has been recurring theme in your life? What is, you know, there's something that either you've thought about or somehow you end up being back in that arena. What is that thing that kind of keeps popping up over the years? That's typically, frankly, that's in my experience been, you know, God kind of preparing you for what your purpose is. And obviously there has to be a passion. I mean, you have to have a passion, and people talk about, you know, your purpose being the intersection of, you know, of your passion and gifting, really, because
mm-hmm.
there has to be gifting as well, obviously. I mean, I could want all I want to be a pro basketball player, but can't jump, can't shoot, can't run fast, so that's not going to work out real well for me. But anyway, I just, that idea, as you said, of, you know, with the home, what keeps coming back. And I love that that's, you know, that's your approach, or, you know, and has been your approach over the years, is, you know, think about it, pray about it. Not one of these, hey, I've got three more offers, you know, you better make a decision today kind of deal.
Well, over the years, it was like, it was very easy to, what do you call it? It was very easy to, people would go, oh my gosh, how did you, and this is again years back because I haven't been doing it, more because of not being, you know, with my hand and just different things and with getting, you know, been in it so long. People would say, how do you, oh my gosh, Sally, you narrowed it all down in 2-3 houses. How did you do this? Like, we worked with other people and it would take houses and houses and houses. And it was because
mm-hmm.
I really could step into their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And care about what they needed and push out my stuff all the way. Because
mm-hmm.
if I was just putting my opinion in it, then I'm not going to like hardly anything, right? I mean, it's going to be a different, I'm going to want something completely different, you know? So that's kind of really tuning in to serve and to say, this is about you guys, not me. And then once in a while, somebody would, you would think you had it right, and somebody would just end up loving something that was totally different, you know? But it really is about trust and faith and kind of having that focus. And I don't think, and we're just about ready to finish the half of the first half, I don't think we as individuals give ourselves enough credit. We have such gifts And so many people reach out and think only this one can do it or only that one can do it. And unfortunately, I think our world is a very materialistic, not everywhere. I mean, you have many, many countries that could care less about materialistic stuff. But I think in the society we live in with the U.S., there's so much materialistic stuff going on. And there's such a, unfortunately, money is an issue, and everybody has to have money to survive, right? So that's kind of like our trade. But I think lots of times people are saying, how'd they do this or how'd they do that? And it's not their niche, you know, so it's not their thing. So if we just get inside and focus in what we're doing and tapping into our spirit and soul, it makes it a lot more peaceful, and things come to you. It's not where you have to reach out and grab everything, you know. There's that Asian, there's the East and West side of thinking, you know, in the world. And it's learning to have this come to you with your gifts, and it's pretty interesting. So I think we're just about wrapping up our first half.
Yes, we indeed are, and man, it's been, again, fascinating. The number, by the way, and so many folks listen to our archive shows, and they continue to grow. These days with the internet, I think that's just life, the on-demand thing. But if you are listening, and maybe you had something to add there in that first half, it did kind of fly by, 347-945-5428. Or if you want to join the conversation with Dr. Glenn Villanueva, the number again, 347-945-5428, as we talk about an intriguing book title, The Me Addiction, Why Having It My Way Isn't So Great After All. And Dr. Glenn Villanueva joins us. What's up, buddy?
Not too much. Just waiting breathlessly to talk with you.
All right.
Oh, I'm so looking forward to it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
You're welcome. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, you, I'm blessed to be right now with two of my best friends, and I just love connecting, you know, kindred spirits, if you will, Glenn Villanueva, as I mentioned, Natalie, Dr. Glenn Villanueva, a physician in the Central California area, but has had this passion and really a desire to communicate a message around what, you know, what he calls the me addiction, and has written this book, and then, as I said, privileged for, boy, 3 years, just about to,
right.
Was it 3 years or over 3 years?
It's been 3 years, Randy. Yeah, right at 3 years.
We did
we did
these Me Addiction Minutes where he would share nuggets. And by the way, are those available anywhere online if somebody wants to listen to those?
We are in the process of getting those archived online on our website. It's, you know how it is with technology. There's always something new to be done, and at this point we have 2.5 years or 2¾ years worth of radio spots, 60-second spots, so it amounts to a little bit over 320 radio spots that we've accumulated and archived over the last 2.5 years.
Wow.
It's a lot.
Yeah, and again, why don't you, Dr. Villanueva, why don't you kind of talk a little bit about, give us an overview of the book and why, you know, what kind of drove you to really this mission, and it is your mission in life to get this message out
right there.
What started all this for you?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that you've mentioned, Randy, is that I am a family physician, and I take care of primarily the underserved, and so I take care of a lot of immigrants and undocumented folks, as well as field workers and drug addicted patients and what have you, and a lot of folks with some serious issues. And I've been taking care of this patient population for 17, 20 years now. And
wow.
It's been a long time. I didn't, you know, time flies, right?
And boy, does it.
It does. And you start seeing that people have these health issues, and so often, and I would see it every day, and I'm accustomed to it, is they would tend to blame their poorly controlled diabetes on me. I'm not taking good enough care of them.
Oh, my goodness.
When, you know, one patient, for instance, would say to me, you know, Dr. V, I don't know why my sugar keeps going up. All I'm doing is eating salads. And I would say, really? Well, your sugars are still 400. How are you just eating salads? And then this would go on for about 3 or 4 months, and he finally would say to me, Well, you know, Doc, I have to confess to you something. I said, what's that? What do you have to confess? And he said, every night at 11 o'clock at night, I get these cravings. And I said, uh-oh, what do you mean cravings? And I said, well, I just want to eat everything in sight. So I go to Burger King, and I buy a double Whopper with cheese, large fries, and an extra large Coke. And that's
every
what I
night?
Have
oh, no.
Every night. But for 4 to 6 months, he'd been blaming me that it was my fault that he wasn't healthy and his sugar wasn't okay. And this is repeated over and over, whether it's diabetes or heart disease or they can't quit smoking or, you know, health issues related. And then I would see it in other aspects of society. One of the things Randy and I would chuckle about is when you look at people in marriages that are having difficulty, inevitably, it's the spouse's fault why the marriage is not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always somebody else's issue that she's not doing it for me or he's not meeting my needs or if he would only change or if he would only do this. And people just had this idea that everything wasn't their issue.
Yeah.
And so
blame it on us. Yeah, outside forces.
Yes, blame it on outside forces. You know, this lack of personal responsibility, personal accountability, and that in the end, I'm entitled to all of these blessings and all of these good things and to the exclusion sometimes of everyone else. And so a number of years ago, I started to see more and more among people that I saw in the world that, hey, listen, the question is, what's in it for me? What can I get out of it? How does it affect my bottom line? How can it bless my family or my retirement account or whatever? And so it became something more and more offensive to me to be a part of and to see. And so about 4 years ago, my wife and I and another couple decided to start this ministry, this nonprofit, Shoestring Ministries, and the vision of it is mindset, attitude, and behavior change by taking the focus off of me and putting it on Christ.
And it's called Shoestring Ministries?
Yes, Natalie, Shoestring Ministry.
Okay.
And so one of the things we did was in thinking about the phrase self-centeredness, self-focus, people hear that and they don't necessarily connect with it because, you know, selfish people are other people, right, not necessarily me. And so we rephrased the idea of selfishness and self-focus to an addiction, a me addiction. I'm addicted to what I want, when I want it, and I want it right now, and it doesn't matter what my spouse thinks or my boss thinks or my friends think or my parents or family or church or anything. I want to do what I want to do right now because it feels good and it feels right and you guys just have to deal with it. And so we've put together this ministry trying to combat this idea that selfishness is really the holy grail and it's not. And so many people or self-focused without knowing it or without accepting it or without identifying it.
Good,
you see it in so many ways. In so many. It's insidious, really.
So somebody may not think they're selfish because they're not even identifying it, right? But they're just, they are. I mean, it's obvious to you, but
yeah,
not them, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. And we, many of us have difficulty with self-insight, and myself included, right? We think we're doing well, and that's why we need these groups of accountability around us to help with that. You know, one of the things that happened 6 months ago, 8 months ago, is I was doing the physical on a little girl who was about to start kindergarten. And I asked her, you know, in just small talk, getting to know her, I said, so how old are you? And she sat up real tall and on the exam table and she says, I just turned 5. I said, wow, that's great. And I said, started to ask her about school, and then she interrupted me, and she said, and do you know what that means? And I said, I'm sorry? And she says, do you know what me turning 5 means? And I said, I don't know. I'm sure you're going to tell me. And so she sat up even taller, and she said, it means I'm 1 year closer to being on my own.
Oh, you're kidding.
She's 5 years old.
Wow.
So, and I asked Mom, I said, is she serious? And Mom said, it's the craziest thing, but for the last year, each day she just keeps talking about how she can't wait to live on her own and be on her own so that she can make her own choices and be her own boss.
At 6 years old?
At five, actually.
I mean, that she's going to do it at six once she turns the year, yeah.
Yeah,
wow.
Right. She's saying that she's ready, you know. I'm ready to make choices for myself. I'm ready to be the boss of my own life. I'm ready to have the world center around me, and let's do this. I'm like, you haven't even started kindergarten yet. And so we're seeing it even the youngest ages, aren't we?
Wow. Yeah,
I wonder what shows she's allowed to watch. You know,
Bridezilla, maybe Bridezilla.
Yeah, Bridezilla.
Yeah, really, it must be something like that. Oh my God!
Maybe.
Oh my God!
Hey, well, Dr. Glenn. So the thing is, and then that makes me think. I mean, as I think about how young she is, and she's verbalizing that, I think we see it in the actions of even newborn babes.
Absolutely.
Right? We come into this
right.
world, the center of attention.
Yeah.
And for the first couple
some
of years,
us do,
you know,
some of us don't.
I had
to throw that in there.
Okay. Yeah, but I mean, a lot of kids, we come in like we cry and we get whatever we want, right? We get fed
sure.
because we cry. So we
right.
get trained early that you know, we can have our needs met, which I'm guessing, again, on a physical level, that's important and healthy. But does that also start kind of that young in terms of the formation of, okay, it's about me, right?
Yeah, I think it does. And then the maturity level, I mean, obviously a toddler, infant can't take care of themselves, so they definitely need that kind of attention and that kind of help. I think the issue arises in the development and maturation of an individual where they start behaving that everything revolves around me.
How do we get your website and your book?
The website is shoestringministries.org, O-R-G.
.org, okay. With an S, ministries
and,
with an S, right? Okay.
Yes, ma'am, correct. And you can access the book and purchase the book and get information about the book from the website there. And there's a meaddictionstore.com is the online storefront.
Meaddictionstore.com.
Correct.
Oh, I love
right.
it. That's fantastic. Well, just a quick question, because I know I'm sure.
sure
with, well, you go through the stepping through and teaching people and trying to work through
yeah.
them, maybe awareness. But what happens for the people that, just a quick thing, because what happens for the people that maybe were taught and trained as kids, you're not important, you don't mean anything, just be there, shut it. Kids are to be seen and not heard. And
right.
they didn't get that as growing up, and maybe people do too much for other people, and then after you grow up and you're an adult, you have to learn to be a little bit more selfish and going, I can't be selfish, I'm not selfish, I was never selfish, I don't know how to be selfish. Where does that come in? Do you ever have that? Because then we're almost being told, you got to be selfish, you got to take care of you, because if you don't love you, no one's going to love you, you know, that kind of thing? Like, so
yeah.
is that just
yeah,
like
yes.
a whole different person, different kind of situation, or is there a blend?
Well, you know, that's a great question.
Loaded question, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, no, don't be sorry, of course not. It's an insightful question and thought. One of the things you have to come to is whether you were raised one way or another, the human condition is to be selfish. The human condition is to, I need to meet my needs, and I need to get them met somehow, whether
okay.
those around me developed me to believe that and to buy into that and acceptably buy into that, or they didn't. There's a
okay.
base part of human nature that says, I need to have my needs met. The problem really ends up being when my needs being met and what I want versus what I need, what my wants become the needs, as well
okay.
as what I need and or want trumps whatever anybody else needs or wants, which is not how you live in a productive society. We get this idea that in order to make it to the top of the ladder, whatever ladder you're on, corporate or otherwise, is I need to step on whoever is in my way to get there.
Which is
there's
so bad, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That's horrible. But there's lots of other schools of thought to which I subscribe to is the way in which you succeed in life is to help other people succeed and help them to reach their goals and reach their fulfillment.
Mm. And make it a win-win. It's
absolutely.
A win-win. And
absolutely.
It comes back.
And
exactly.
Yes, no doubt. And there's this idea that we compare ourselves so much to what others have that there's a kind of a almost a an imbalanced woe is me. For instance, certain types of physicians make X amount of dollars and they say, oh my gosh, I don't make that much money. Well, who are you comparing yourself to? You're comparing yourself to the plastic surgeon in Beverly Hills.
Randy and I talk about that all the time because we always talk about how, you know, we're all miracles and we're so wealthy from so, I mean, health is number one, you know, and not to compare, you know, and not to compare. I mean, we're all so different and it's a sad thing that that happens in society too, yeah. It's really horrible.
It's common. It's everywhere you turn. Turn on any television show, open up any magazine, turn on your computer to any website, and it's all about comparison. This is, you look at these shows, how much house can you buy for $500,000? Well, in New York, it's this little bitty studio apartment, and in, you know, rural California, you could buy this big place, and in Texas, you could buy this, you know,
exactly.
Yeah, a huge mansion, when in reality, a whole lot of people are thinking, I'll never see $500,000 in my life.
Right.
And so it just feeds this comparison, and it can be incredibly self-destructive when we do it with so many parts of our life.
That's true. How do you mentally get people to see that, don't do this, you're wonderful, just because, you know, maybe somebody loves a position that they're never going to make more than X amount of dollars because they're in heaven in that position. It's who they are. It's their gift. And unfortunately, our society doesn't allow them to make more than that. I mean, people get into these, right? But they love it. So they shouldn't change what they're doing if they love it and they're able to, you know, work out other ways to make things work, right? So how do you, is that a confidence issue you have to work on through this? With the people, or is that more of a
awareness? Maybe you start. I think the book is about bringing awareness, and I think as people are more aware, you know, and maybe I, just as you're asking that question, Natalie, my mind starts racing on practical ways, and I know for a variety of self improvement areas, you know, people talk about journaling, keeping track, whether it's calories, whether it's thoughts. You know, negative thoughts. I don't know, Glenn, maybe you can speak to this, but, you know, awareness and then maybe some accountability and follow-up, and I think all of the above to help people work their way out of this me addiction, right? I mean, there's got to be a way out, I guess, is what we're asking. And what are some practical ways?
Practical ways are always, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road, and part of it has to do with learning somehow, and for every person I believe it's somewhat different, and that's contentment, true contentment, being at peace with this is what I have. This is what I have with looks. This is what I have with my age. This is what I have with my health. This is what I have with my pocketbook. This is a career I have today, right? This is what my possessions are right now, and saying, how can I make the most of enjoying that now as opposed to always wanting something else? For instance, one of the simple thoughts as a physician that I see, and that's this, is that one of the best ways to have car envy is to go up to the local hospital that I work at and put patients in and say, oh my gosh, there's every new kind of car out there in that parking lot where the doctors go. And trying to understand that the car, the value of it or not, or whatever it is, isn't the value of me or the value of them for that matter. And we have this idea that sometimes is the case. And the awareness, you know, the awareness issue, if the more that you talk about it, hey, listen, with friends that love you and care for you and want the best for you, is, you know what, I struggle sometimes with, man, it'd be really cool to have that XYZ super fantastic car or that super fantastic house or, you know, whatever it is. Help, you know, keep me in check on this and asking your spouse to help you with that. And the other part that you speak to is journaling. Journaling is a great way to do that. Spending time with yourself, with thoughts, as opposed to with stuff, is a beautiful way to do some of this, you know.
That's so funny you say that, though, because it's so interesting. I've you know, it doesn't, like with the cars and with the things, I'd rather have a car that's paid off, and I could care less what somebody thinks. But the men kind of look at it differently. No, the men look at it differently, and I think it's funny. It's funny you're saying that. I have to go to a – I'm stopping. I'm in Honolulu right now, and I'm stopping by a penthouse, Brokers Open. It's beautiful. I mean, it's going to be like 10,000 square feet, very, very expensive.
Wow.
And it says they have valet parking. And I used to have a Mercedes here that I got rid of when I was going back and forth to the mainland because I'm not here as much now, right? So I've still kept my old Grand Jeep Laredo here in storage the last couple of years, and right now I have it. And then I have a Mercedes on the mainland, but the Mercedes wasn't a in real estate, you can't pull up in an old clunker, but I don't have to do that part of the business now, right? So unfortunately, there's certain lines of work where, oh, shoot, well, of course you want to wear a suit or a dress. You want to be professional. You don't want to offend anybody.
Sure.
But there's certain, unfortunately, lines of work where you're stuck having to whatever. Well, with where I am now, with what I'm doing, and I don't need to go. I'm not taking anyone out in vehicles or whatever. So for me, temporarily, this other Jeep is perfect, and it's old. I mean, it's old, and it's funny you said that because I was thinking this morning. Ooh, they said they have valet parking. I could see me pulling up with that. Somebody's going to have their opinions, and no, they will. And I'm just like, it's fine with me because I know who I am, and I am who I am, and I doesn't make me, and I could go out and buy the whatever too, but I don't need it, you know. I'm just giving that example because it's funny you're bringing that up right now, but that's not something I maybe would have been able to do with myself 15 or 20 years ago.
Right, and that's
I think I might have mentally been like, oh, I got to hide the car down the street. No, I'm just saying. I mean, and I've had nice cars. I'm just giving you an example because right now this is practical. And when I go into it, because I'm deciding which island I'm going to stay on and da-da-da-da, you know. So it's Randy, you know. So it's one of those, it's a perfect example. And I've seen people that were filthy, filthy rich still drive an old beat-up car from the 80s or 90s, you know, because, and that's the part that it would be so great if we could all get to just understand it's not even your bank account. It doesn't even acknowledge that because some people are out there driving, you know, a $200,000 car with a huge bill. They don't own it outright. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, so that's a beautiful thing to be able to get to that point. But that takes a long time in life, maybe, doesn't it? I mean, it's not an easy place to get because people have other people saying things, questioning opinions, and it's kind of a tough place, isn't it?
It is, and we make choices lots of times, understandably, but also selfishly, to make ourselves look good. In most any circumstance, right? No one wants to look bad. So even niceties, we say, hey, how are you doing? The selfish part of me doesn't want you to know that I'm sucking wind today and I'm having a really bad day and it's really been tough. And I don't want to say, you know what, Randy, I'm having a really rough day right now because I don't want to go through the effort of explaining and I'm a little embarrassed by it. Instead, I say, oh, you know, I'm doing pretty good. I'm okay.
Exactly. I know. It's sad, isn't it? And we put the because we also want them to feel good too. We don't want to bring them down, right? The other person.
Sure.
So you say, "Oh, I'm great. How are you doing? Great." And then you're right because we don't want to. So how does it in? I know we always run out of time. I can't wait to read your book. And with the me addiction, is it really? Can you, I mean, you can work with people on all different types. Is it really kind of just saying, hey, you're beautiful, you're wonderful, but other people are too, we've got to work together? Or is it kind of like teaching people not to be so self-centered on things? Or
That's another loaded
question.
It is, and it's a question that has a really long answer. And the short answer is it's a daily work in progress. You're never there because there's always the battle that says I want to put myself first. And part of my contention and part of the contention of somebody who is following, if I can say it, is following Christ or following love and following trying to put others first is that the tension is sometimes and lots of times I want to put myself first. And that's not necessarily the best thing. And it's a constant struggle in that. And again, I'll go to the idea of marriage, and that's the tension of it's not my fault or it's not Mm-hmm. I'm not the reason why this problem is happening. If only the other person could fix it.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard, isn't it? The life is.
Oh, it
yeah.
is. It is.
Yeah.
It's very difficult, and it's a daily struggle for me, as well as most people that I know and have come in contact with. I know that Randy, when he does his marriage seminars, certainly sees a whole host of problems in marriages simply because of self-centeredness, selfishness.
Boom.
You know,
That's true.
Core, man.
Yeah.
That's why it's so. It is. Marriage is such a great laboratory for working out the me addiction because
wow.
you have one of two choices in a marriage, man. Your ugliness and your gunk get stirred up and exposed, and this person who knows you better than anybody else, you're not fooling him or her anymore. So now what? You know, there's a
right.
pride thing there, right? There's, like you said earlier, there's all of that
yep.
going on. And so
wow.
you either decide to just say, hey, you know what, that topic's taboo, we're not going to deal with that, we're not going to deal with this, and all of a sudden you just kind of cruise through marriage, or that's one option. The other option is, of course, to just, you know, go try and dazzle somebody else, and you know,
yeah.
Which 50% of people do, just bail on the marriage and go try and
right.
fool somebody else for a couple years till the stuff gets stirred up, or, and here's door number three is the one really should be door number one, which is let God, through your spouse, you know, heal you, and that
right.
gets back to the practical stuff we talked about, which is, first of all, identifying,
yes.
you know, selfishness. Okay, how am I being selfish? Okay, how do we fix this? How do we work together to, you know, and then of course, then you get into, and Natalie and I have talked about this, and Glenn, you and I have too, but there's a point where, you know, there may need to be, and this isn't a bad thing, you know, a professional stepping in, to
yes.
help you work through some broken places, and you know, and then move on. But anyway, you got me going on the marriage
That's
thing.
It's a tough. Isn't it being human is really tough, isn't it?
It is. It is.
I just thank God for God, because I couldn't do it without God. There's no way.
That's absolutely the case from where I sit and stand, and I look out, and the patients that I take care of, and the folks that I work with, Christian or otherwise, Christ followers or otherwise, atheists, you name it, you know, this idea that dealing with the self is and the human nature of, man, I want what I want when I want it, I want to pursue it, and it doesn't matter what anybody else thinks, I want it. And so that's a tough one.
Wow.
I love your tagline, you know, the byline about, you know, the whole idea of what's in it for me versus what's in it, you know, for God. You
right.
know, just flipping that thing around, whatever the situation is, you
yeah.
know, when calamity happens, when, you know, all manner of challenges rise up in our lives, often our go-to default thing is, poor me, oh, what's this going to be, fuck
oh.
me, instead of, you know, okay, God, what are you teaching me here?
Right.
Hey, how does
there you go.
And then we live here, and life's so short, too, right? It makes you want to really do what you can do with your gifts. You know, to help other people,
yep,
because
definitely.
It's so short.
It is, and every time you turn around, it gets shorter, and you recognize that. I unfortunately just went to the memorial service of, I have a 13-year-old daughter who's one of her girlfriends from school. Her mom suddenly went to the hospital with a headache last Thursday or a week ago Thursday, and
then my God.
4 or 5 days later, suddenly died. And
oh,
so,
I'm so
yes.
sorry.
Oh, thank you. I am too. It was the first memorial service that my daughter had to attend for someone that she knew, and it was, you know, an emotional thing. But you start looking at that and say, you know what? Life is short. You're absolutely right. And there are those teachable moments that say, you know what, honey? You need to be there for your friend. She didn't want to go to the memorial service. She was scared. She was timid with it. But then when she went, she could see that her being there was helpful to her girlfriend, and to hug her even just for 5 seconds and say,
"Oh God,
I'm here for you, and I'm thinking about you, and I love you." And that was it. I mean, that was really important for our daughter
and
to see.
It's so important. Oh wow,
Doctor,
oh, it's so
Dr. Glenville and Aweba. Dr. Glenville and Aweba with us. We've got like about 45 seconds. And
we're
going to
get cut off then.
It
was such a pleasure, and I'm going to get your book. And,
likewise, and God bless you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much, so much. And to everybody
right.
out there, and God bless your friend's mother. To everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.